there. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio 88.5 and 100.7 FM and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Polk and Marion Soil and Water Conservation District shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We are illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley. I am your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. And today I am in the studio joined by Lewis Siegel with the La Cumute Valley Charter Schools, which is in Polk County. Welcome to Conservation Spotlight, Lua.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes. So I've known Lua for a few years now through our native plant sales, and we've also collaborated a couple of times on learning opportunities for her students. She is the gardening instructor at her school and has helped build an amazing program there for the kids and really their families and the school community altogether. I really enjoy the newsletters I get from her and thought we need to help spread the word about all the good things you're doing, Lua, and to give our youth hands-on education and learn about growing food and native habitat restoration.
Ooh, that sounds great. You don't need to ask a question.
So enough of me talking. Let's jump right in. Can you start by telling us about the school garden program at La Cumute Valley Charter Schools and how it's evolved over the years?
Yeah, so this is something that was envisioned by the school board. Members of the board were very passionate about the role of healthy food in education and growing, you know, healthy minds and engaged future citizens. So they came up with a plan to develop a gardening program that would offer a space for children to hands-on learn how to grow, process, cook, and even eat healthy meals, all from the, you know, from farm to table, basically. That was the big vision. And doing this in a way that was also thoughtful and using regenerative agriculture processes. So that was a big vision and kind of specific, but also kind of general. So then they went out for recruitment. They learned that I had been working on a similar program at a neighboring school. They invited me to apply, and we started a gardening program.
That's so exciting. And your program has transformed parts of the campus into an edible landscape. What was the original vision, and what does the space look like now?
Okay, so this is the story of how we met, actually. So we were given this little piece on the far end of one of our properties, and they thought, well, we could start a garden here. We put some hay bales to start some garden beds, and then came the big flood of, that was around 2021, maybe, the winter. Everything was just dragged away, and I thought I needed to become educated about the land that we were working on. Mm-hmm. So I invited you, Polk County Soil Water, the Watershed Council, to just come and educate me mm-hmm. of where we lived. And we learned that our school is on a floodplain. This is a wet prairie. I learned a little bit more about the La Cumute Kalapuya that have inhabited this land for thousands of years, the microclimate, the geology, and then the planting. So we moved our garden a little bit farther away from where the flood was coming.
Wise.
But then also decided that we couldn't just singly focus on growing, you know, food, introduced foods, but we also need to honor the land on which we lived. So very quickly, early on in the development of our garden program, we decided to add interpretive trails and reintroduce native species that had been cleared out of the land that our school was on. And so I think over time, we're just developing a really beautiful and integrated approach to food production to not only be introduced, but also native and some foraging along the way.
Mm-hmm. How exciting. And a big theme in your work is helping students connect with nature through hands-on learning. Mm-hmm. Why is that connection so important for young people?
Oh, I think we are just becoming increasingly disconnected with how things actually work. Mm-hmm. Technology is wonderful. I mean, technology is been one way that humanity has engaged with its natural environment throughout the years. But with the broadening of digital technology, I think we're becoming more and more disconnected, both from the natural and the social environment. And so one of the things for the board and the administration and the teachers in general is that children need to go back to having more direct contact with how food grows, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not so easy. It's not as easy as going to a supermarket and picking up a pack of Top Ramen, you know, that what goes into a healthy meal. And, you know, children thrive as we've become more industrialized and sort of mechanized a lot of processes. Sometimes we can risk mechanizing our own educational processes, and we're finding more and more children that might find it hard to be successful in the mainstream classroom. Mm-hmm. And so going outdoors offers this space for so many children to really shine, to show their skills that they can't maybe show in the mainstream classroom. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, there are children that just need to go and dig up gravel. There's one child that just comes out and says, when we're done with this, can I please go keep digging holes? I just really love digging holes. Mm-hmm. And there's some need that is being satisfied that we're not reaching if we do everything the same for every child. And the gardening offers that space, and that just makes me smile.
Yeah. I've been to your campus two or three times now, and every time I come, it just feels so relaxed and inspired because you've done so much great work there. And I don't think we mentioned where is your campus?
Yeah, so we're in rural Polk County. We have two campuses. The elementary is about 5 to 10 minutes south of Dallas, Oregon. Mm-hmm. We have kinder through fifth grade. And then further north up by PD, we have our middle school campuses, so 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And all we have between 210 to 220 students. Mm. All of them get a full gardening class every week. This is part of their regular curriculum, so it's not an after-school or an optional class. So all students are getting experience outdoors all year. So all the school year, of course.
Wonderful. Yeah. And you're split between the two schools?
Yes, I am.
That's a lot of juggling.
It's a lot of juggling and a lot of gardening. So at this point, we have about 9,000 square feet of fenced gardens, plus the trails and the other things. Yeah. Mm.
And the program incorporates native plants, habitat restoration, and learning about the history of the land, as you mentioned. How do you approach teaching students about local ecology and stewardship?
Mm-hmm. Well, we learn it by being out there. So when we're walking down the trail at this time of year and the stinging nettle is up, we're not going to pull it out. We just go, hey, there's stinging nettle. We're going to leave it here because this is really good for us. It's good for our health. This is how it has been traditionally used. Mm-hmm. There might be a story around it. We might harvest it. Then there's some cleavers maybe on the other side of the path. We'll harvest those, you know, wearing gloves. We'll pull the nettle, mm-hmm. wash it, chop it up, saute it with garlic from the garden, mm-hmm. eat it on a cracker.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how we learn. In the winter, we went out for a walk into our neighbor's property, the oak savanna, just to see the different seasons, how it affects our local biomes. And we picked some, rose hip, mm-hmm. and then we cut off some bark from our willow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these poor children, there's this whole generation of kiddos that have not had any experience drinking tea, mm-hmm. even less making tea. So mm-hmm. we had a whole lesson about making tea and then honoring how nature provides what we need when we need it. Mm-hmm. And so the rose hip is there when the flu season is coming up. It's full of vitamin C.
Yeah.
The willow will help if you have pains or a headache. And so, then their teas became more like a stew because they couldn't stop chopping, you know. And it was okay. That was their first experience, and they'll get better at it. And they realize it's pretty bitter when you put a lot of willow in there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, then the most tender qualities started to emerge from children when they said, my dad gets lots of headaches. Can I take some willow stems home? And it's just so sweet, you know, to see mm-hmm. how much love there is in a child. They just don't always get to show it. Mm. But in moments like this, when they're connected to something that's meaningful mm-hmm. to their real life and their day-to-day, you're allowed to see that. And that just, you know, brings tears to my eyes.
Oh,
you know?
Oh my gosh. Your students are lucky to have you.
Mom, I'm lucky to have them.
Gardening can teach so many life skills beyond growing food. As we've alluded to, what are some of the biggest lessons students take away from working in the garden?
So many. And I don't know. I just think we could teach everything in the garden, the math, the literacy, because really what the world needs, you know, now information is a Google click away, right?
Right.
Sorry, I probably used a word I shouldn't use, a trademark word. But, you know, with AI, you can get any information. Education is not about leveling the play field in terms of information delivery. Education is more and more about seeing how things integrate, how to solve problems, how to work as a team, how to overcome obstacles. Mm-hmm. So many of our children become so paralyzed by what our media has unfairly, you know, described as unsurmountable anxiety or challenges, you know. And so in the garden, when a child is, oh, this is so heavy, we go, okay, well, then get a partner. You know, it's not like, oh, sorry, this is too hard for me. And I think these are the skills that our new generation of citizens need to develop, is to harness the power that's within them and channel it into ways that they not only benefit themselves but benefit others, that what they do is intimately linked to the benefit of society. And I think these are the, we try to articulate this in the way that we speak with them, how we describe things. It's not just about mine, yours, this is ours. How do we make this better? How do we appreciate the beauty around this? How do we show gratitude? How do we show generosity by not taking everything? We leave some behind. And these are teachings that we get from the people who've inhabited this land for thousands of years, you know, the reciprocity, the rule of, you know, the 50-50, the percentage that we take and what we keep for seed, for the animals around us. And it went beyond what you were asking. But these are all, I think, in education, we're raising, my belief about education is that you're building capabilities, and capabilities are made up of information, skills, qualities, and attitudes. Sometimes education tends to focus a lot on the information. But what is our attitude about ourselves, about each other, and the environment? What are the skills we need to interact responsibly? What are the qualities, the human qualities? Humility, sacrifice, generosity. So I try to be mindful of those things in what we do.
You're building such a wonderful community, and I just love that your board and the school has taken such a holistic approach to education there.
That is the key to the success of our program. I mean, really, school gardens have a shelf life on average 3 to 4 years because they're usually run.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is an important thing to know. It's usually a PTO that has a pet project or a parent volunteer that then moves on when their child moves on, or maybe a teacher and then they get burnt out. So many schools have greenhouses that now are full with, like, baseball bats or weeds. And so we've gone now, we're into our sixth year, and the key, the absolute key, is that you have full support of the board, the administration, and a funded position. So my position is funded full-time as a school garden coordinator and instructor. That means I do all the parts of fundraising, networking, the teaching, and the maintaining. So it's a big position, but still, it's very uncommon to have that, and that's because we have the full support. And now we're moving into, you know, our cafeteria, so we're moving away from catered meals to scratch cook meals to eventually scratch cook that will include produce from our local farmers. So in that way, schools are now contributing to a robust local economy, which is pretty exciting to me. That we're not a silo; we're really a center of advancing human prosperity, not only like the spirit of the human, but also the material part of the human prosperity.
Wonderful. Just a quick update. If you're just joining us, I've been talking with Lua Siegel with the Lucamute Valley Charter Schools and how she's working to give kids hands-on gardening experience and education. And you're listening to Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. Lua, you've spoken about the impact that working with plants and animals can give on children, especially students who may struggle with traditional classroom settings. What have you observed firsthand?
So much, yeah, like I pointed out before, that just the tender heartedness comes out at the most surprising times. Like I was at the middle school last week and, you know, they were being a little snarky and rolling their eyes around the activities. And then I said, well, we're done with this work. How about you walk through the garden and see what you witness? See what's blooming, what's growing, what's edible, what's ready to harvest. You know, to foster those skills of observation, which we seem to be losing in a culture that's so much about passive entertainment. And you're receiving, but you're not taking the initiative to go out and observe. So there was a learning objective behind that prompt. You know, and then they go around and they're just chatting. They didn't look like they were looking at anything. But then all of a sudden, they start coming back and they go, can I take a rose from that rose bush? Oh. And I had clippers in my pocket like teachers do. And so I said, of course. And I start cutting them. And then they go, oh, my mom would really like that. Or my dad really likes roses. And then a lot of them are taking roses home. And I thought, you know, for a little bit, I was just thinking this is a generation. I was feeling almost hopeless about the future of humanity. You know, it'd be exaggerating. But then there it was. There was that natural goodness and the innate nobility of every human being. And that's what keeps us going. You know, it's a belief in that.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, when we bring animals in, baby rabbits or ducklings, you know, they're just the sweetest qualities.
And especially this time of year in spring.
Yes. Yeah. We can't wait for us to have our own chicken coop at home. Ooh. At the school. We have the chicken coop. It's just every time we've tested ducks, they disappear. We have, as you know, when we visited our campus, we have a bald eagle that just swoops down.
Yeah.
So we're looking and becoming a little bit more raptor safe, but we're getting there.
And so what are some favorite projects, crops, or activities that students get most excited about during the school year?
You know, this is the bounty of a program that now has longevity. Children start to anticipate things that they might have looked at us in the beginning like, "Art, you've got to be kidding," you know. So last fall when we came back and they saw the giant zucchinis, they were like, "Oh, Miss Siegel, are you going to make zucchini muffins?" You know, they were so excited.
Yeah.
And I remember the first year I had to hide the fact that there was zucchini in the muffin. You know, I gave them the muffins and then I go, "Okay, guess what vegetable from the garden is in there?" And then when the word zucchini came out, they were like, "Oh, I can't believe I'm eating this," or that I'm going to compost. Now they're looking forward to it. So that just so shows the sea change of attitude. In the beginning, if there was a leaf from the garden, we're going to try this. You know, don't yuck my yum. There's certain rules about how we taste foods. They were apprehensive. Now they just go up to a plant and it's, "Can I eat this? Can I eat this?" And they were picking some broccoli that was going to seed. So they're picking the leaves. They were so excited. They look like a bunch of locusts had just attacked our garden. They were just picking all the leaves and eating. And they go, "This is so yummy. Yeah. We should have this for school lunches." So, yes, we're seeing a transformation and now an anticipation and a request, which is pretty exciting.
Because I imagine you may get some new students at your school that don't have gardens at home or may not even know what a zucchini is when they're first arriving.
Absolutely. But now, you know, when you do something year after year and it starts to work, your peer pressure has totally shifted in the opposite direction. So now all the kids who've been there before, they're like, "Of course we're going to eat this." And then the others are like, they look around, their eyes are glancing at, okay, a majority of people like this. And they might not. And we still have kids that don't want to try. But because we have this healthy attitude about how we give feedback about food and it's okay to like it, and you quietly go to the compost bucket and you can dump it, but you don't say, "Gross, this is yucky, I don't like it," because our words have power and we use our power for positive effects. Right? And so when they start seeing the kiddos that like it, I go around and ask, "Who wants seconds?" Inevitably, 100% of the time, one of the ones that didn't want to try it goes, "I think I'm going to try it now."
Oh.
You know, and so, yes, now you're not kind of dragging a program. Yeah. Now you're supporting a program.
Yeah, and the kids are influencing each other in a positive way.
Absolutely.
Building and sustaining a program like this takes creativity and community support. What partnerships or community involvement have helped the garden program thrive.
Yeah, it's all, well, you know, just like we want children to see the integration of all elements that make an ecosystem, the same applies to our social ecosystem. So we've appreciated having knowledge from an agency like yours or the Watershed Council or BLM. We've had donations of plants when they have excess from their restoration projects. We've benefited from those. So that's one way to partner. We have a beautiful, we've tried, you know, as we've built up our program, tried to build up the seed to table, but we just really struggle with the seeds because I'm not at the school every day. Seedlings need to be watered. They need to be monitored. We have rodents that eat the seeds. So we're not quite there yet, although we had some success this year. But Sharing Gardens in Monroe, they grow food for a food bank. And then they found that really maybe the food bank was getting all the needs met by other farmers. And they felt that they wanted to now contribute to raising that next generation. So they start plants for us, and we just got hundreds of seedlings from them to put straight into our garden. We collect pots, we give it to them, they come back with live plants. And so that's a beautiful partnership that we have with them. We have partnerships with families that come in and turn on the irrigation through the summer, and we want to strengthen that. Now we have a parent that has offered to teach canning. So now that, you know, last year we had about 1,500 pounds of produce, which was record from the garden. And so now the next question is, how do you store? How do you preserve? How do you train families to use produce from the garden? So, you know, as you advance in complexity, your questions become more complex, right? And your skills become more complex. So that's where we go from year to year. We grow and have new questions and new skills to learn.
Yeah.
And partnerships are key to being able to do that.
So if you're listening and you want to support Lua's garden, please feel free to reach out and I can connect you with Lua.
Absolutely. I mean, now, you know, now questions become exactly how do you move past the shelf life of the 3 to 5 years? And as school funding goes down and maybe tough choices would need to be made in the future, how do we make sure that this, which might be considered not the basic need of a public education, how do we keep this going? So as I said before, the rising complexity, we're starting to wonder, well, should we have an endowment fund to make sure that the program continues? And so that raises new questions of partnership. How do we reach out to the community that wants to leave a lasting legacy, that wants to invest in long-term education, in regenerative practices, in schools? I mean, my dream would be that schools become this learning hub where we could partner with local farmers and we test, you know, dry farming on our school, or that we take our kids to work on people's farms. And so how does that get carried into the future? And yeah, if anybody's out there listening and wants to be part of that conversation, I'd really welcome it.
Awesome.
So I should also mention, in terms of partnerships, Oregon has a strong Oregon Farm to School network of supporters that have provided us with a coach that has guided a team, a garden team. We also, we could consider as partners our funders. So the Oregon Department of Education Farm to School grant funded us this year. And that allows us, our co-teachers, 100% grant funded, all of our supplies and field trips are all grant funded. So that doesn't really come from public school funding. And so really we are reliant on grant funds. And as maybe federal and state funds decrease, then foundations become the, you know, the source for a lot of funding, then it becomes a little bit more competitive. So it's become a little bit stressful this year to look for funding. We got lots of no's and then a final yes at the very last minute. So that's just something for the public to know, is a lot of time goes into seeking funding. This is not funded by public education funds in its entirety.
Maybe backtracking a little bit, but are there other schools in the area that you know of that are doing similar things, like that you used as maybe a model when building this program, or did you start completely from scratch?
Yeah, there are. There's a strong movement. There's the Farm to School movement in Oregon, but also throughout the country and internationally. So we're part of a cohort of multiple initiatives that are very diverse. Some have, especially in larger cities, maybe have a nonprofit that then does a kind of a push-in farm to school model where they go into schools and they lead classes or tasting mm-hmm. food tasting mm. activities or offer field trips. Maybe a farmer, an education farm would do that. Then there are other schools that might have a part-time, maybe part of the nutrition services or the culinary arts if they have a high school that's doing or an FFA that's doing the farm to school. We're one of very few models that has a full-time school garden coordinator. So that makes us unique. Hmm. And a gardening program where all students have a gardening class every week. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty unique as well. Yeah.
Wonderful. And when students leave Lucky Mate Valley Charter Schools, because I know we're at the tail end of the mm-hmm. school year, what do you hope they carry with them from their experiences in the garden?
That's a good question. I hope they will have a love for food, are more equipped to make healthy choices around the food that they eat, and also where they source their food from. I hope that they will learn to honor the nobility of the farmer as the basis of any civilization, mm-hmm. that the farmer is so important for our survival, that food is one of our basic needs. And that responsibly grown food takes effort. I hope that even if they don't become farmers themselves or have a school garden, that they will know how much work goes into growing their food and they will be willing to pay the price that it takes to do that responsibly. Mm-hmm. I think that's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see. I think you're really making a big difference in students' mm-hmm. relationships with food, mm-hmm. nutrition, and each other.
I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Lua. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me and just for sharing the joy of education and agriculture.
Mm. I've been talking with Lua about her school's amazing and well-received gardening program. I hope that our conversation today leaves you feeling inspired to try growing your own food or making space for wildlife and pollinators at home. And if you'd like to learn more about the garden, you can head over to their Facebook page, Lucky Mute Valley Charter School Gardening Program. I'm your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator for the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Every effort matters, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. Please be sure to visit our website for resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. And if you like what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 88.5 or 100.7 FM, the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and keep up the conservation conversation.